everyone, welcome to this PNP webcast. Today we're going to talk about how to version the usage of the client-side object model for your SharePoint customizations. My name is Bert Jansen, I'm a service engineer in Microsoft, and with me today my lovely assistant is Svesa.
Thank you, Bert. Happy to be your lovely assistant on this particular webcast. So my name is Svesa Juvonen, I'm a senior program manager in Office 365 engineering as well. And I'm going to be assisting Bert or interrupting Bert while he's explaining the stuff, so asking questions around the topics and slides today. But take it away, Bert.
Yeah, thank you, Vesa. And don't ask too difficult questions. No, just kidding. All right, so CSOM and CSOM versioning. You might wonder, like, oh, there's only one CSOM version. Well, once in the days, there used to be one CSOM version, but now time went on and we actually have three different CSOM versions. And if you look at them, they kind of built on top of each other. So initially we had SharePoint 2013, which had a CSOM version. So you see the 15 version over here. That version evolved with each CU. So whenever Microsoft patches SharePoint with a CU, we also patch the CSOM version with it. So that's why you see a different, you can see bug fixes and additional APIs appearing in CUs compared to the RTM. Now that we also have SharePoint 2016 released recently, so which also has a CSOM version, which again will be patched. So in the future, when we have the next CU, there will be a new CSOM version of SharePoint 2016 as well. And finally, we have SharePoint Online, so which already exists for quite a while, but it also has its own version. Important notice from version numbering is that for 2013, we speak about version 15. For SharePoint 2016 is 16.0, and Online is 16.1. So that's something to remember. Online 16.1, SharePoint 2016 on-premises is 16.0. In general, you see the arrow going up. It means and the bubble getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And when you move towards SharePoint Online, which means that the CSOM capabilities grow in each bubble. We'll have more and more and more APIs and functionalities. Mm-hmm. There are, however, some cases where there's also a difference, where there's something appearing in 2013 RTM, which is not available in 2016. These are minor edge cases, but they can be there. Now,
and Bert, on that one, sorry for immediately interrupting, but doesn't that mean, so what's going to happen if I'm used the SharePoint Online NuGet package towards SharePoint 2013? So does it mean that doesn't work, or what's the impact out of this one?
Well, technically speaking, as long as you're using APIs which are available in SharePoint 2013 as well, then it works. So essentially, the CSOM package that you use calls into a server side. If the API you're calling with CSOM package is available server side, and that's 2013 in this case, and the package is online, technically it matches, it works fine. However, if you use a method from the SharePoint Online SDK to SharePoint 2013, which is not available and server side, then it blows up. So there is a risk that you get into errors. And the second dimension is portability. We officially do not really support you using the SharePoint Online SDK and CSOM against the SharePoint 2013 on-premises.
Makes sense, absolutely.
But the general, what I just wanted to also give you a bit of feedback about is this arrow pointing up, which means that more and more features are available in each of these versions. Now, how do we update CSOM versions? So by now you've learned we have three individual CSOM versions, two for on-premises, one for online. The on-premises ones, so 15.16 being 2013 and SharePoint 2016, they are upgraded, patched with each CU or PU, we should probably say right now. Anyway, the monthly updates that we push out. So you can always grab the latest from your SharePoint server from the SAPI folder and grab the latest version if you need it. We also have the SDKs that we release for both 15 and 16, which are not released on a monthly schedule, but on a 3-4 monthly schedule, kind of. So you have different options to grab those assemblies. One
And
thing.
on that one, actually, Bert, so you probably were going to mention that already, but now if I would be a developer and I'm doing actually a development towards SharePoint 2013 or SharePoint 2013, let's say, and I'm using actually April CU from 2015 and I'm compiling against that one, wouldn't that then mean that my baseline for my customization is the same CU? So if you would be using that customizations in an older version of SharePoint 2013, you might run into an issue.
Yeah, correct. So it's since the CSOM API that you use needs to have a counterpart server side, that you have to ensure that you use CSOM version which matches with your server version, or which is lower. That's theoretically the best. Then you're completely safe. So there is a small risk that if you use like the most recent CSOM version of SharePoint 2013 and you deploy your code against like SharePoint 2013 SP1, that you might use an API which is not available. You could build around that and check CSOM version numbers before you make the call and omit particular calls. That's something that we do in call library for a few of the calls, very limited actually, but so you can protect yourself if you need to create an add-in that for which you don't know the target SharePoint or premises version. So we have options there, but I think the best is to keep them aligned. So we talked about SharePoint 15, 16 being patched with CUs for SharePoint Online, so CSOM version 16.1. Our distribution mechanism is NuGet, so you can't go to the SAPI folder and grab them. So the way for you to get them is our CSOM online NuGet package, and that one is updated fairly frequent now. So each few months we will get a new NuGet version with a new CSOM with new properties and methods. And in this case, that always is aligned with the service. So. We typically don't release CSOM capabilities which are not in the service yet, or and if they're not there, they will be there very soon. Sometimes there's a little bit of difference with first release versus regular online, but typically you should be fine.
And obviously the SharePoint Online is a slightly different beast when you think of it, because we Microsoft know exactly the version which is running in a SharePoint Online backend. So then we can control the release cycles and all of that. So for SharePoint Online, development against SharePoint Online is relatively straightforward from a versioning perspective.
Yeah, you just use the latest CSOM and off you go.
Yep.
Now, you saw those three versions, and if I'm a developer, I build a product and I need to target, let's say SharePoint 2013, 2016 and online, then I have a problem because I can only, in Visual Studio, I can only attach either CSOM 2013, CSOM 2016, or online, but how do I create then an add-in that can work across environments? So, and that's one of the key learnings that we want to give you in this session is how to do that. And it is possible, but it requires a little bit of change in your Visual Studio project file. Actually, the PnP core component uses the approach we're going to explain right now. So our PnP core component, which you can grab from GitHub, is compatible with SharePoint 2013, 2016, and online, and we just can compile the proper version. So now, how did we do that? Let's have a look. Let's first run over a number of things that you need to put in place to realize let's call it the CSOM version-independent customization, being a class library or even a SharePoint add-in. So the title here mentions class libraries, and that's what we'll show with the PnP core library. Later on, we'll also talk about actually building a SharePoint add-in that is CSOM version-independent. So the first step, strongly advised to copy all your CSOM libraries from all the versions. So if you need, let's say, SharePoint 2013, 2016, and online again, copy them all into a central location inside your project structure somewhere. So you can reference the assemblies from that particular location. This gives you control about the version you're using. If you do not do that and grab them from the SDK deployed versions, they're coming from the GAG, and at that point, it's you never know what you get. So this gives you a reliable way to refer to the proper version. Next thing is in Visual Studio, you need to create configurations. So by default, you get a debug and release configuration, but you can create more configurations. So what we'll do here is create a debug 15 and debug 16 as additional configurations, and release 15, release 16 as well, which then target SharePoint 2013 or SharePoint 2016. The debug, in this case, targets SharePoint Online. Another thing we need is conditional compilation symbols. So sometimes you need to be able to exclude code for SharePoint Online, for SharePoint, sorry, typically for SharePoint 2013 or SharePoint 2016, because the API that you want to use is not available in SharePoint 2013 and 2016. So that can be done using a conditional compilation symbol. Then the big trick, actually, and this is something that you might not be aware of, is that you can implement dynamic assembly referencing in Visual Studio. So your project file, where you have a reference to the CSOM assemblies, it can dynamically load the proper CSOM assembly depending on the configuration, so debug, debug 15, debug 16, that you choose. And finally, we talked about this conditional compilation symbols. You can use them to really target code. I already mentioned that, actually. So that's for class library, and the upcoming demo will give you a bit more context about that. If you create an add-in, you create and use Visual Studio, you get a solution with two projects, the SharePoint project and then the web project. For that, the same approach applies. So in the web project, you can use the same rules that we described in a previous slide. Only one thing to consider is that when you create an add-in, you can choose a target SharePoint version. And it's best to choose the lowest version you want to support. So if you create an add-in that needs to run in SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint Online, you choose SharePoint 2013 as target SharePoint version when you create the add-in. That's the only thing that's additional compared to the class library setup. All right, with that, let's show what this all means and how it works. So I'm going to switch to my Office Dev PnP Core project, and which I loaded from GitHub. Now, today, if I look at the project and I go to the assembly references, and I take, for example, Microsoft SharePoint.client, and let's make this slightly bigger, even more bigger, and zoom in, you will see that this one is coming from this particular folder, assemblies/16.1. So we grabbed assembly from this folder.
One thing about that one, you said that you want to make sure that those assemblies are as part of your solution. Obviously, you can not Visual Studio solution in the folder structure, in a centralized folder structure. So like in this case, so you could actually then reference those assemblies from a multiple projects.
Yeah, this is indeed, we have the PnP root folder, and in there we have assemblies, and then we have the different projects. So somewhere in your tree, in your project tree, or in your code tree, you have an assemblies folder where you kind of put all your assemblies that you use as in your projects. I think this is also like a best practice in .NET development, yeah. But you saw that we had 16.1 over here with debug on top. So we have debug. If I now zoom in slightly over here, you see we have debug 15, debug 16. So what happens if I choose debug 15? So let's do that. Go to debug 15. Let's refresh the view over here. Let's zoom in. And now we have assemblies/15/Microsoft SharePoint client. So without reloading the project, by just flipping the configuration, Visual Studio now sees the 15 as the SharePoint version, as the assembly being referenced.
So Bert, doesn't it just reinforcing the message? Absolutely. So, but this actually then means that you can have a one code base and you just compile that with the different directives. So you don't actually need to always update the things.
Absolutely. You don't need to change anything in your code base. I just flip the configuration and I can compile for SharePoint 2013, SharePoint 2016, or SharePoint Online. That's the beauty of this. And
absolutely, absolutely. And I can imagine that there's a lot of ISVs and system integrators who are highly interested about this one because they do development towards on-premises and SharePoint Online.
Yep, for those guys, this is indeed a very easy and handy approach. Now, let's first show you guys how we implemented this conditional assembly switching, because this seems to be some black magic that automatically flips the assemblies. But that black magic is fairly straightforward.
Not black magic, it's pixie dust.
Pixie dust, yes. Let me first unload the project, because once it's unloaded, I can open up the project file, edit the project file. And one key and thing to grasp here is that a Visual Studio project file actually is an MS build file. So this guy here is an MS build file. You see the schema, developer/MS build/2003. So this is really an MS build file. And MS build files, you can kind of tailor tweak them. They're very flexible and they have conditional constructs in them. And that's what we actually did. So we initially created the project file and manually edited the version assemblies for one particular version. And then we tweaked this project file slightly by, and I'm just zooming in, by using a choose when condition and then include assemblies for particular configurations. So in this case, when it's debug or release, we include 16.1 versions of all the assemblies. If I scroll down. When it's debug 16 or release 16, we include the SharePoint 16.0, so SharePoint 2016 assemblies. And finally, if I scroll down again, in all other cases, so the otherwise construct here, I include 15. That's how we set it up over here, which gives you the option to just dynamically load assemblies. So we have three versions we load, but the same technique could also be applied for different purposes. But it's fairly simple. It's a small change in your project file and you have dynamic assembly loading.
I think the follow-up question is then, okay, that's actually pretty cool, but how do you consider this and how do you take this into account within your code? Because if you use a newer version of the CSUN, there would be properties which are not available with an older version.
Absolutely. And let me talk about that. Let's first load the project again. So one step is having the proper assemblies connected. That's what we talked about. Second step, as you mentioned, Vesa, is indeed how do we deal with this at a code level? And for that, I need to go to the properties of the project. What we use is so-called conditional compilation symbols. In this case, we have two symbols attached on-premises in SharePoint 2013 for our debug 15 build. So we are in the build targeting SharePoint 2013. And we have two additional directives applied, which allows us to exclude code or include code depending on the directives. So what does that mean? For example, if I go to App model extension. If I go, let's grab tenant extensions, which is one of our extension classes in the core library. You'll see that a lot of the code here is excluded because we're using APIs which are not there in on-premises SDK, because this is about multi-tenancy. And to do so, it's simply the compiler directive, conditional compiler directive, in this case on premises. If not on premises, then this code is included. So in this case, we are SharePoint 2013 as a target, so we are on premises, so we excluded this code. This is the way how you can then kind of tailor the code so you have one code base that can compile against different environments.
That's pretty easy way to do that. Obviously, when the only hard thing to do, or let's say slightly more time-consuming thing to do, is to prepare the project file. But after that, it's just a matter of using these compilation directives within the code. So if you're accessing a property within a list or web which isn't exposed in SharePoint 2013, you can just mark that as part of the compilation directives.
Yes. And the project file, actually, it is a little bit of work initially. It is a one-time work because the conditional loading only is done for the SharePoint client assemblies. So all the other assemblies are loaded just once because there's only one version that you need. Now, we typically do not add that many SharePoint client assemblies, so that's fairly stable, which means that you don't have to change it a lot. Actually, we only implemented it once, so we never changed it. So it's a one-time work that you need to do, and then you're good to go. What is maybe a bit of more challenging, a bit more work, is when you start excluding code because particular property is not available in season version XYZ. That might be the case today, but then there comes a new CU for SharePoint 2013, SharePoint 2016, which brings along this particular method. You have to know that, and you have to update your code to then at that point include it. So for that, I would recommend following up on Vesa's blog on all the system changes. You have a good blog, Vesa, listing all the
or
changes.
Or dev.office.com.
dev.office.com right as now. Well. Yep. Both will work. Anyhow, so this covered a client of a class library. Now, the same also applies for a regular add-in. So what I did here is I created a very basic add-in, just an empty add-in actually. And I want this add-in to be able, I want to deploy this add-in against SharePoint 2013 and against SharePoint Online. So I have two configurations. Debug online, debug 2013. And I did the same trick. So I changed just the project file to have a dynamic assembly loading. Initially, when I set up the project, so if I, let's close this one again, just to show you guys the way to get over there. So if I take the SharePoint project, this one, if I do properties, go to the SharePoint tab. You see that I chose target version SharePoint 2013. You have to do that, pick the lowest version and then leave as is. As soon as you start playing with this, we will try to add assembly redirects. So Visual Studio does that for you. At that point, the whole system starts breaking, the whole assembly loading model, because with the assembly redirects, Visual Studio tries to override it. And in my feeling that didn't really work very well. So just do this once, leave it on 2013, and that's it. At that point, you have the dynamic loading. So today we have, and let's again make things slightly bigger. So we have the joy of taking very long paths is that you don't see them on screen. Anyhow, here is 15 is loaded. If I switch this guy to debug online and refresh, you'll see that we have 16.1 loaded. So that is there, that's good. Now let's just prove very quickly that we can deploy this guy to online, although we put 2013 as target SharePoint environment. So I need to enter the proper URL, which I did. I didn't log on yet, so let's go online again. Do we get logon prompt? No. Let's try to deploy. That will show the logon prompt, I guess. Now it's time for a good joke. No, here's the prompt already.
Yeah, there we go. So the lock-on prompt comes when we are deploying or when you open up an ASPX file in the Visual Studio, which is kind of strange. Or well, actually, when you activate the project as well every now and then.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you wait too long with logging on, then something times out, and then the deployment tends to fail.
That's true.
Those are the little gotchas you learn over time. But now I'm deploying an add-in to SharePoint 20, SharePoint Online, where I targeted add-in for SharePoint 2013.
Well, you targeted adding in SharePoint 2013 in the Visual Studio extension for Office, and that's because we don't have that same kind of switching mechanism for add-ins natively in the Visual Studio tooling.
Well, there is a little bit of in there, but that doesn't really work well. So
it's not optimal.
It's not optimal, yeah. But for me, it doesn't work. That's maybe a little bit more blunt, but yeah. Anyhow, we're loading that in, and trust me, it will work. It should work. It has to work.
We all trust you, Bert. Absolutely.
We're all working on it.
But doesn't this mean that you're kind of you're essentially just replacing the Visual Studio tooling extension with your own way of managing that, which is then slightly more reliable, or it has been developed in a way that it's pointing to your local assemblies, and so you can pinpoint on a specific version?
Yep, correct. The Visual Studio option will use assembly redirect, so it will take stuff from the SDKs or from the GEC, wherever you can find stuff.
Yes.
And this is more, in my view, more reliable because you control which assembly you link to. And it's switching is not switching off here because this will always impact it. Will your web config, it will add those assembly redirects. This is way easier. You just go debug online, you go debug 2013, that's it. No updates to files, no assembly redirects being injected or removed. It's very clean, very simple.
And on the regards of the Visual Studio tooling, the native Office tooling, obviously it's the challenge is understandable for making this same kind of setup natively within the tooling, and that the challenge is actually the versioning of the CSAM, because we don't release the specific versions as NuGet packages or MSIs for every single CU. And the Visual Studio, native Visual Studio tooling for Office cannot actually make the similar kind of high-tuned or polished approach as what we can do with an MS build file modifications.
Correct. We actually depend on that assemblies folder where everything is nicely put together, which is not something that the Visual Studio guys can depend on because they can't just ask anyone to just take the same steps as we did. So
true,
they did a good
true.
Job giving the context they had to work in.
Yes, absolutely.
With a little bit of additional configuration, it's easier. So that's the point. That
And maybe in a large-scale development, when you're an ISV or a system integrator, the batch MS build file modifications are much more, let's say, suitable for you. If you just write a one add-in or an app and you just maintain that targeted on SharePoint Online, absolutely Visual Studio tooling is more easily doable, so you don't need to do modifications manually and within the project file. So obviously, what way or option you will choose is dependent on what kind of development you're actually doing. That's what I'm trying to explain in Finglish.
Correct. I understand Finglish. All right, so we could deploy the same add-in also to 2013, but that does work, and you have to trust me in that one. It's the same thing.
Oh, we trust you, Bert, on that one. Yes, absolutely.
For time's sake, I'm going to switch back to the slides. So the slides, this is more reference slide, but it shows the construct that we used for the dynamic loading. So if you want to repeat this in your project, you just copy the pieces from here, and then you add additional references. So additional reference per assembly you want to include. So that's fairly easy once you have this available. Here again, you see the conditional compiler directives that, in this case, exclude the major with minor version limit property because it's not available for on-premises SDK, but I think you get the point. You just use this construct in your code base so you can have like one code base that covers all versions. And finally,
Bert, actually, can you go back on one more slide? And
yes.
Sorry for messing
this
up
one?
Your flow. The
the
assembly references. So just to reinforce the message here, you can absolutely use the SDKs, which I downloaded from a Microsoft Download Center, but the challenge of you using them, and they're simple and you can easily get started and all of that, but the challenge of doing that is that you cannot point to a specific version within the hint path. You can see the hint path for every single assembly. And using the fact that using the assemblies within a local folder, not in a global assembly gag, will mean that you're able to pinpoint specific versions. And that's really let's say, why maybe the SDKs isn't the easiest way in enterprise development scenarios. They're absolutely the easiest and best way to get started. But when we need to fine-tune our processes, when we do, let's say, continuous integration, when you want to have outputs automated of daily builds of your add-in for all of these three different targets, this is absolutely the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think this is best practice for developers as well. In general, not talking about specifically about SharePoint, but in general, kind of grouping all your external references together in a way where you can control the versioning. That's important.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is that's .NET framework development practices, not even the SharePoint development practices. But with this kind of an approach, we can take advantage of all of that within a SharePoint development. And then you can easily automate those daily builds, for example, for your add-ins. So as part of your builds, you will get a specific version for on-premises and 2013, 2016, and SharePoint Online. And you're good to go from a one code base, which is absolutely excellent, actually. It's like it should be, right?
Yeah. We just made it better. Well, just to wrap up, remember, Visual Studio Project files are MS Build files, so you can do really cool stuff with MS Build, which means you can do cool stuff with your project files. You saw one little trick, but there are additional tricks like conditionally including projects depending on the version you have. So you could include an additional project for SharePoint 2013 versus SharePoint Online. Gives you lots of flexibility. And if you want to learn more, the MS Build reference gives you the complete options that are available in MS Build. And around season versions, I would like to point to our devoffice.com, where there's an excellent blog from Vesa that gives you more context around using the correct season version for your SharePoint customizations. With that, Svesa, I think we can wrap up. Do you want have some last words before we close the recording?
I think just quickly on a last word, and no doubt we should have we as a Microsoft, we should have clarified all of the CSOM versioning challenges and how to deal with that way, way, way beforehand. Now, as part of the SharePoint 2016 SDK and CSOM going out, we are falling into the model where we have three different targets for our add-ins, SharePoint 2013, SharePoint 2016, and SharePoint Online. And it's about time that we actually figure out the best practices and patterns how to do development within a single code base for targeting for three different environments. So from Microsoft's perspective, I do apologize on the fact that we haven't been open or we haven't actually documented the versioning model of the CSOM in the past, but better late than never, right?
Absolutely. I think that also really was a nice summary of the session. So thanks everyone for attending and hope to see you soon for our next webcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.